Accession number 1677, Reverend J. Walker, Reel 5.
Reverend Brooker, Reel 5. This was your first, obviously, your first contact with the German soldiers. Were you forming an opinion of them quite early?
Not really. When you come to think of the only one I had seen at the time, and we were advancing all the time, is it? The only one I had seen was that German officer, that's all. I don't think it was until we got to Normandy that I really had a lot of dealings with them.
Have you any other memories of Sicily?
Yes, I do. As soon as the war finished, campaign finished in Sicily, we naturally were settling down. There was a rumour going around that we were going to come home, but we didn't know. And I was asked, they knew I was an ex-signal, and the signal officer was going to come home. And they asked me whether I'd like to go on a course at Brigade Headquarters. I said, yes, certainly. So I went on a course at Brigade Headquarters, and I met another friend of mine, Ernie Cousins, who was an ex-signal sergeant from the Somersets. He was also in the same position as me, going to take over as signal officer in the 8th Durham Light Infantry. Anyway, there were others there as well, but we'd only been there a day when the instructor said, we can't teach you anything, you know it all. So, of course, we were both sent back to our units, which was a good thing in both cases. Later on, there was a course up in divisional headquarters, and both he and I went. That was in Taormina, lovely place, Taormina. I don't know whether you know it, but oh dear. I brought some photo postcards home, but of course I've got rid of them. And we went to course up divisional headquarters in Taormina. We settled in, went up, had pigeon, roast pigeon for tea, something I'd never tasted before. Come the morning, information came through, we were going home. So back to our units we came. That's how it happened, and then we sort of embarked on a Dutch boat, I think it was, coming home.
Did Montgomery come to see you? He gave a talk to the brigade, or?
I can't remember whether he did, but it was at his instigation that we came home with 30 Corps. He wanted to bring 30 Corps home with him for the Second Front. That's why we now know why we came home, you see. We knew what it was for. And
who do you recall who was commanding the battalion during the Sicily campaign, particularly your part in it?
Colonel Woods, I think. Colonel Woods. Which I did.
Did you get to know him?
Not really. He was one of those old school Thai officers, you know, regular officers, pre-war years. And things were a little bit different. I mean, most of us were up for the duration sort of thing, and it was a bit different, or territories or something like that, conscripts or territories. And there was at that stage, there was a little bit of a, what shall I say, us and them type of thing, like the old army days used to be. It hadn't changed quite so much. Mind you, it's changed considerably the other way around now, but at that stage, you weren't quite so close. If you were just a subaltern, as we were known, you were the lowest of the lowest of the officers, and so you didn't meet with those. When of course he went and John Mott took over, it was totally different. Much more of a family atmosphere. We found this very much so.
Any other officers? You said there was just the one officer, of course, when you came into the battalion in your company. Other officers joined?
Yes, we had reinforcements when we came home.
Any come to mind as characters or personalities?
Oh dear, I can't even remember the names, that's the trouble. See, people like Roy Griffiths weren't with us in Sicily. Personalities. I remember George Lanning was in Sicily with us. Donald and I got on very well with them. We were invited to their company.
Donald Taylor, of course, you said was in your company.
Oh, yes, yes. He and I were the two.
What was he like as a person?
Well, we were thrown together, and he was training as a minister. I'd been doing a lot of church work in the Boys Brigade and things like that, and suppose we had a kindred thought. And I was being born and bred a Methodist. He was going to be a Methodist minister. And so that was that. And we had one thing in common, chess. Did he ever mention to you about the chess? He carried a pocket chess. And every spare moment we got, we sat down and played that. Really, I mean, we did. I mean, we were thrown together and we were kindred spirits in a way.
Had you had time to get to know your platoon now? Were the characters and personalities standing out within the platoon itself?
Not really, because that campaign in Sicily was only, a few weeks, wasn't it? And so much had happened since. I found one or two outspoken ones, usually the ones that have been through a lot of it. But generally speaking, no, there was nothing. It was just this: the two sergeants, the sergeant and the lance sergeant who came out of reinforcement. I suppose they were the ones I knew most of. One of the corporals was a typical Geordie. Seemed quite nice, but the others I don't recollect.
Maybe a little bit earlier in your own experience with them, but within the platoon there must have been a group who would go on into any particular situation, and the reluctant ones that would follow, and those who were extremely reluctant would have to be driven. Is this usually the setup?
I suppose yes, you can say that. It more or less is. You've got certain ones, but I would say those that would go on were much smaller than those that would follow up or reluctant to go on. There weren't all that number that were...
Well, the tendency must have been for those who were daredevils or dashing on would be the first ones hit, of course. Yeah. And would tend to fall in number more quickly than the others.
Oh, yes, I should imagine so.
Is it, obviously, as an officer, it's very important that you do get your platoon going as a group.
Mm-hmm.
Is it your role or the sergeant's role or both of you that gets this cohesion?
Oh, it's done together. It's done together. If you don't work with your sergeant will work with you, you might as well give up. Providing you've got a good sergeant to work with you, he's got your competence, you've got his competence, you can have a good platoon.
And you accept advice of a sergeant? Say,
of course,
example.
Of course. He'd been in action, I hadn't, well, except Bruneval. Oh yes, that is half the battle, is if you're prepared to accept advice and assess it, whether it's worth taking or not. Oh yes, I think that's a wise thing of any officer, if he's got any common sense. If he's not prepared to take advice, he's not going to get the confidence of his platoon. I'm sure he's not.
You sailed ultimately from Sicily. Do you recall what period of time, what date this would be to return to England?
Oh, August. August 43.
And the ship, I think you said, was a Dutch ship?
Dutch ship.
Memories of the journey back at all?
Except that some of them were a little bit boozy. And Don and I were not. We didn't. I wouldn't say I didn't drink, but I'm not a boozer. I'm not going to say I haven't got drunk, but that's later. But we had some of them. It was a journalist, I remember. Just remember, John Lloyd. He was a journalist. Whether he's still alive or not, I don't know. But the way he was living then, I shouldn't think he is. And he had one or two cronies. Now, we were in the same... it was about eight to a cabin then, and we were in the same one, and you can imagine what it was like.
It must have been an enormous sense of relief, not only amongst officers, but the men in the battalion, some of them who had been out for 2 years or whatever it was,
yes.
and going home.
Mm.
And did that atmosphere obviously reflect itself
it
in the boat?
It did, yes, that's what I meant. It would be so. Oh, I thought, I guess that's what I intended, really, to imply that it was because of the, perhaps, relief, although temporary. They knew why they were coming home. I mean, we all knew why we were coming home. But it was a relief, and that was it.
You say you all knew you were coming home. Was that because you knew you were coming home for D-Day?
Oh, yes.
Did you know what your role was going to be in D-Day at that point?
No, not at that point, no.
Had you expected not to be a assault division with other divisions that had been training in England and so forth and never been out?
Well, they're going to put try troops in first, aren't they? They've got to.
But at that point, you didn't know this?
No, but we guessed it. We sort of thought, well, if he's going to bring his crack corps home, that was what 30 Corps was, his crack corps. If he's going to bring those home, he's going to throw them in. And, well, it did happen, as you know.
Any other memories of the voyage itself?
Not so much that. Coming back, I don't remember too much. I remember more of the Britannic going out than I do the journey back. Well, of course, it isn't a long one, is it? It took about a week, 10 days. That's all.
Will you begin to feel a bit of a veteran yourself at this point?
No.
So essentially, you had no real major battles.
I had not been in a battle as such, because we'd been moving forward and they were going back all the time. The major battle in Britain was Promissory Bridge. There was no real battle, just an odd skirmish or things like that, and that was all.
You get back to England late autumn?
Late August. So September, I think.
And coming from the hot climate, did you take to the change very well?
Well, it was a bit sort of. The worst thing that was happening, though, was the number of people went down with malaria, including me. We got back to England, I forget where we landed, but we went to, double name, not in Essex, round that way, though. I was saying to myself this morning, couldn't get it. Saffron Warden, and we were there for some little while, and then we moved.
You got to Saffron Walden. What about leave? Because, as I say, some of these men have been.
We had a fortnight's leave. We sort of booked in at Saffron Walden, then they had a fortnight's leave back, and
you would go home because you were married at this stage, of course. There'd be a reception for you when you got home, was there? On your leave?
I spent part of the time at my mother's and the other part with my wife. I can't remember.
Saffron Walden was
at that stage. I had both my children were born. And my daughter was born whilst I was the Royal Fusiliers, and my son was born when I was on an embarkation leave for Sicily. They were still in Glastonbury in Somerset, where my wife lived. I think we had a bit of a do, not my home. They're quiet. My parents were getting on, you see.
So back to Saffron Walden, now you'd start training there of some kind.
Yes. We sort of settled down for a bit and then started training.
What form was that training taking?
I have a feeling that about that time, I think we began to know why. And we sort of... But we didn't do the actual training there. We didn't start training till we got to Southampton, just outside Southampton, between Southampton and... what's that other town just inland? Oh, dear. Anyway, just outside Southampton. Then we started training, going off training for things.
Was there any problems with the men? They'd been on leave, a very short leave after being away for so long, then back again. And then this situation looming of going into D-Day. Were some of the men showing some dissatisfaction with that?
I don't know, because by then I was signal officer.
There were none of your signallers going off AWOL or not coming off leave of this kind of thing?
No, it was it was from Saffron Walden. Just before we left Saffron Walden, I think we moved somewhere else. I told you Braintree that we stopped at going to Dunkirk, but it wasn't Braintree. It was Lowestoft we went to on the coast. This was where we went to Braintree. We went to Braintree from Saffron Walden. It was on the journey to Braintree that I developed malaria, and I went into Colchester Hospital.
Had you had any signs of malaria previous to this? Did you know that you caught it at all?
No, because we were having meprosyn tablets, you see. The point was, we had them while we were out there. But as soon as we got on the boat, they stopped them. Consequently, when we got to England, half the potato went down with malaria. And I got it. I caught it on the journey to Braintree. And, yes, that was confusing. I should misremember that we went from, in the old time, that wasn't stopped at Braintree. We diverted to Lowestoft when Dunkirk was on. That was where we had one bring up per platoon on coastal duties there. Anyway, come back to this. I hope you can sort all this out.
What were you doing at Braintree?
I don't know, because I wasn't there. I was in hospital. Then they moved from there to Southampton.
Did you join them there?
I joined them at Southampton.
How long were you in hospital?
Oh, fortnight and a fortnight's leave. You know, sort of...
Convalescent
leave, yeah. So it was a month, so... And then, as I say, I joined them at... By then... Yes, we spent Christmas at Saffron Walden. And then we moved to Braintree. And it was in the spring that they moved to Southampton.
When you came back again, you were coming from a relatively relaxed situation with regard to dress and forms of discipline. Back into England, were you expected to be regimental again?
We couldn't. Our gear was still in the Middle East. In fact, I never received my service dress. Someone took it, and I had to go up to Grosvenor. John Arnold and myself and one or two others went to Grosvenor Square, where officers had been killed and things like that. Their kit had been handed in there, and they let us have gear to put ourselves up. Eventually, my service kit did arrive, minus Sam Brown, of course, and so I returned it. But a lot of us had to do that.
Had you at this point got your Middle East medal ribbon up with the 8 on for 8th Army?
I wasn't. I didn't get the Desert Star. I had the Italian Star from that. No, we didn't get them. We didn't get those for some time. I can't remember when we had them.
In Southampton, what form was your training taking now? Because it must have been getting close to the D-Day situation.
Oh yes, we're beginning to train. We're training at Studland Bay. At times.
What were you doing?
Landing. Landing exercises. Southern Bay.
Any that stand out in your memory?
Not really.
So we're getting onto some form of
we'd go by
transport and then landing as an invasion force.
Yeah.
Was this the pattern?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
And the weather, was it okay?
I don't know now, come to think of it. About springtime weather, about this time of the year, I think it was. Cold and fine. And we were in camp under canvas. In a tree, in amongst the trees, of course. And try to think of the name of the place. Is it
Nightingale Wood?
Oh, I wouldn't know what it's called. You know it, do you? It could have been. Could have been.
Yeah, you were there for a while, and then, of course, as D-Day did come across, they closed it. And weren't allowed out of.
That's right. Of, yeah.
With Americans, I understand.
I don't know about the Americans, but we were doing sort of combined the barracks and leave was cancelled and everything like that. And then
at that point, you must be getting really down to the detail, although not necessarily the actual places and names, but you're getting down to the detail of the invasion.
Oh, we did know. I knew details of it some weeks before the
where you were landing.
The old groups, where we were going to land and all the rest of it. Of course, we didn't know when it was going to be yet, but we knew it was going to be soon.
Were they telling you what they expected you would get into?
Oh, yes, even the men were told, they didn't know where, but they were told what sort of terrain it was going to be like and what to expect. Actually, it didn't happen quite like what we expected, but I mean, it could have done.
Were you using cloth models and that kind of thing for your briefing, as it were?
I think we did, I'm not sure, but I think we did.
Had there been any changes in the signalling situation? Had there been any changes to better equipment, better radios?
No, we had the 38 sets then, which we didn't have in Sicily. I don't think we had the 38 sets in Sicily. 18 sets, and of course 19 set back to brigade.
So the 18 set was a battalion set, was it?
A company, in battalion, yes. Mm-hmm.
And the 38 set covered what?
Sections.
Of a platoon. Short range for?
No, platoons, I'm sorry, not sections, platoons.
And this year the 19 set was the?
Back to brigade. That was a very much stronger set, of course. That was an ordinary infantry battalion. Of course, we changed over them later on.
As you were being briefed for the invasion, and coming up to the latter stages of it, what role were you being told that you would be involved in? What aspect of the invasion, landing and going on from there, was the signals involved in you? Obviously,
well, that was fluid. That would be fluid. The only thing I got a little James motorbike given to me, and John Reed, who was then intelligence officer, he had one as well, which was so that we could be mobile, because it was expected to be fluid, of course. And I can remember many a time the adjutant handed me a coded message that I had to stop and decode and then catch him up on the bike, tell him what it was and all that sort of thing. In Normandy, quite a lot of that happened. But no, you see, a signal officer is like everyone else. He's got to adapt to the situation, and you couldn't say what role, whose role or what role is going to be. It's generally to keep communications going, and that's it.
And you say that you were obviously part of every O group.
Oh, yes.
Rising out of that.
You had company commanders and specialists. Commanders, that would be the myself, the intelligence officer, transport officer, carrier commander, mortar commander. I'm trying to think what the other one was. There's three of them. Anti-tank platoon. They would all be at the order group because of their roles, what they have to do, what's going to happen.
In that situation, you would basically know where everyone was, presumably, in the layout, so that you know exactly where to
and
so on, what have you.
I would hope to know. It doesn't always work in action, but I would hope to know where everyone was, yes.
Coming to, you were sealed in to the wood where you were camped for a period of time. Have you any memories of that particular period?
No, I think we sort of, lived hard and played hard. We knew what was coming, and we just made the best of it. By then, you see, we'd fitted in, we'd settled in, and we just made the best of it. I don't know whether John Mugg had joined us by then, but I say Colonel Woods was in charge.
And he came about 2 weeks before D-Day itself.
Because John Scott was still there, wasn't he? That's it, if I remember rightly. He was still second in command. I remember him now. couldn't remember him before. Then there was the quartermaster, Love. Was it? Can't remember his first name. I think he... Did he come over with D-Day with us? I can't remember. Anyway, it's not really...
Are your memories of moving from the Wood to Southampton Docks?
No, we stayed at the Wood. I don't think we moved to Southampton Docks. We were close to it, you see, there. We just motored down to the docks from there. That was on the 4th of June, because we were expecting to go over on the 5th. And we went aboard these little American boats. I forget what they called them.
Landing craft of one kind or another.
Well, yes, with the which had they couldn't come close inshore. Of course, we landed in what waist deep water, possibly a bit higher than that, down the two ladders down the side. I'm trying to think what you used to call them. Anyway,
so they'd be quite large, these ships.
Oh yes, yes. Take a few men. I can't remember how many.
Were there sleeping quarters on the vessel as well?
Bunks. We slept with the men then, in a sort of a mess deck. The crew had a small one of their own. I don't know how many they held.
At the dock itself, when you arrived, were there any personages, high-ranking people around to see you off?
Oh, I don't remember. I don't remember. There's too many people swanning around. I know we used to go down there and sort of, I believe, did we practice embarking? I can't remember. We must have done, because I can remember, as I say, trying to get up this 160 minute now light infantry base, I forget, with my signal platoon, because they didn't have too much to do then. I remember trying to get up to it. We never could manage it. Too fast. But
you did not have the opportunity to really train for it, had you?
Oh, I know. It was while we were waiting over the 24 hours, because it was put back 24 hours. That's when we did that. No, the Navy, the American crew had their own part of the ship. We didn't mix with them at all. But I can't remember. I can remember being down with a crowded troop deck on it. But how many they held, I don't know.
It must have been pretty uncomfortable when the 24-hour delay came.
It was, yeah.
Was there any relief from that? Were you allowed back on the quay for anything?
I don't know. I can't remember. I can't remember going back on the quay. I think we remained in the boats. I'm sure we did. And then when, of course, the 6th dawned and Eisenhower gave the go-ahead for that day, 6th of June. We settled down and didn't sleep a lot, obviously. And I can remember now going out into the Sound and seeing all the other boats all joining us from various places. It was a wonderful sight. Huge armada it was, sort of thing. And when we all sort of joined together and started setting sail, I think that we did try to settle down to get a little bit of doings.
What condition was the sea?
I can only remember it more like a mill pond than anything.
It's supposed to have been quite rough.
When we got the other side, yes, it was when we got the other side. But, of course, don't forget, we were the second wave. One knot went in at 5:30. We didn't go in at 7:30. So they might have had it rougher than we did. But it was, you know, reasonably rough when we got over the other side. But in the Southampton water, of course, it was sheltered. And you could see it was like more like a bill pond sort of thing. Probably not, but that's my impression at the moment.
You're with the men, you said, basically sleeping with the men. Was there much for you to do over in that crossing?
No.
Any particular task that you had to see to?
Well, look after your own men, yes. But, I mean, you did that all the time, so it made no difference. because there's nothing else you could do, you see. You couldn't sort of set up communications there. You had to do that as soon as you got ashore. I don't know whether we did now, did we? Let me think. As we got closer. No, I don't think we set up communications until we got ashore. There was a wireless silence.